You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we review the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything was well for you today. Hope you're going to have a great weekend. Hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it's not, you'll get it done anyway. Because that's the kind of brother and sister that you is. And that's why we appreciate and love you. Because you're going to just get it done. But of course, you're going to do it safely. You're going to be wearing your mask. You're going to keep your distance. That's right. You can keep them hands clean. That's right. Because this ain't no joke. So, this is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. If you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcasts. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. We appreciate that. I'm going to forego the announcements. I'm going to read the NYSA Sims because I don't want to leave my guests hanging. And I definitely want to for you to get a chance to hear and, of course, ask any questions or comments to my good brother, Dr. Rinoco Rashidi, the one of the primary researchers of our time. You know, he just ain't sitting back there just reading about it, although he's been detained somewhat, you know, because of the virus. Otherwise, he'd have been gone. Good morning, Rinoco.
Hey, Baba. How are you?
I'm well. I'm doing well. I'm going to read a few pages of the Enye Sesem, and then we're going to get off into the discussion. Okay?
My brother, take your time. Read the announcements, whatever you want to do. I'm in good spirits.
Right on.
I'm in a good mood, so take your time. I'll be here for you.
Right
on. Don't rush.
Thank you, my brother. Appreciate you, man. Yes, I tell you, I never forget when I first met him. Well, I knew of him for a long time, just like other people that you, when you engage yourself into study and be a part of organizations, like I was involved in, I'm still involved in ASCAC, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilizations. That's where I first met him, at an ASCAC a conference, and we've been connected ever since and always will be, and that's a honor of mine. Appreciate it. January 21st. If a man sees a snake and a woman kills it, what matter is that the snake does not escape? What matters is that the snake does not escape? A Yoruba proverb. Among infallible underdogs on the constant verge of violation from enemies determined to remove them from existence, there can be no hesitations. No childish weakness, no escapism. Among those who can neither tolerate our chance, laziness, or treason because they know what ignorance and fear do to the will and stamina of potential warriors. And are we well acquainted with the history of the divided loyalties inherent in delusional states of consciousness? Diligent is to build into an uncompromising, sane vision of Pan-Africanism. Among those who have been outnumbered and outgunned for so long that there is no question that their only choices have always been to stand together or remain indefinitely enslaved individually. Truth is vital,
Accountability is invaluable. Respect, fundamental. Dedication, crucial. Dedication is crucial. Loyalty, imperative. And righteousness, critical. Among those under a seemingly overwhelming assault who have come together as one to repeal permanent enemies and collectively rebuild themselves in the image of their qualified power. It should make no difference who kills the snake. Ashe. Affirm, I care not who destroys evil as long as it is destroyed. Affirm, I care not who destroys evil as long as it is destroyed. January 22nd. Liberated territory grows out of my dome. Chin Yelu. Our hair is believed to be spiritual antenna, and there is no reason to think this to be false. Ours is the only terrestrial-bound hair to defy gravity. Each winding strand of carbonated light, along with the rest of our physical presence, is resilient in its rising. Has one, they have effortlessly withstood Urugu's genocidal efforts to wreck everything African about us. Although many of us are grateful to those who paved the Sankofian gauntlet to hair consciousness and adamantly remain detached from the revolutionary politics of re-Africanized hair, the natural twisting, turning growths have evolved with an awakening from which they benefit. Nothing we have menticidally adapted to distort our beauty, bountiful kinks into our fur and strings, into lesser forms more suitable to minds frozen in glacier cold fronts and fearful of sun rays, has altered or permanently damaged our curls' DNA. Like the rich black earth that nourishes and anchors the forest families, our domes support an endless knotting of roots going back even before Nana Dankanesh, who the Europeans call Lucy. Collectively, our hair is divinely intertwined, effortlessly twisted into the cosmic marrow, winding through timeless cycles of circles, ever onward, ever outward, ever forward, ever able to conceal and reveal wisdom's knots. I can't pronounce the word, but it's an Adinkra symbol representing our need and willingness to struggle in order to become stronger and wiser. Our hair tells stories of love and struggle, of struggle and love, of struggle, love, and achievement, of unconquerable, uncontrollable, uncontainable genius rising without limit or end, rebellious by nature, all forms it expresses are liberated territories. Ashe. Affirm, my hair is free. Affirm, my hair is free. January 23rd. Work on your reputation until it is established. And when it is established, it will work for you. A Tunisian proverb. Those doing the least amount of work toward liberating, empowering, and making African people sovereign are doing the most talking about what others are not doing or what they ignorantly perceive of as contradictions in their work. The reputations of far too many claiming frontline membership have come to be built on idle, self-serving, counterproductive chatter, not concrete, community-evolving, nation-building action. This must change. The balance must tip toward quiet, thought, not speechless workers. For one's reputation is not found in words, at least not for warriors, and what they have done for tales of what they are bound to do. The best are the best because they have long strived to be the best. We see them coming, eagerly awaiting their arrival because of their quality of service they have already given the people. Certainly, they have flaws. Errors among them is inevitable because they are human. But the beauty they have brought to our lives before the errors greatly outweighs the impact their personal struggles have on us. We know them through their reputations. We know them through the evidence of their work. I say, affirm, my reputation is well established. Affirm, my reputation is well established. And the Enye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. I'm going to get to my guest, Brother Renoka Rashidi. We have going to have some good conversation. And I've already got a number of callers already online just chomping at the bit. But let me say these two things first, Baba. Today is Sam Cooke's birthday. Sam Cooke was born this day in 1931, and he died December 11th, 64, 34 years old. On this
he
day,
was born by a river in a little tent, so he said.
That's right. And just like that river, he's been running ever since.
Tell me about it.
Yeah. Yeah, change gonna come. Boy, I tell you. Have you seen One Night in Miami?
I haven't seen it. Have you?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have. I know there's
what do you think?
Well, I think it was good. I enjoyed it, you know.
You say that kind of muted.
Yeah, I kind of, sort of, because, you know, I know in the artistic licensing that people have, you know, when they do a biopic or something of this nature, and, of course, how they make the people, you know, some, I think the casting was good. I think, you know, especially the brother who looked like Jim Brown, and the brother looked like Muhammad Ali, looked like Ali, you know. Sam Cooke and Malcolm were a little bit different.
Was it a good film?
Yes, I think it was a good film. I think it was worth watching.
Would those ancestors have been pleased with it? Are they pleased with it?
Well, that's a good question, because how they made Malcolm look, and once again, it's just like how Spike Lee made Malcolm look towards the end, you know, all sorrowful.
Meaning what?
All sorrowful and, you know, all introspective and so forth. But I could see that, though, because, I mean, damn, his life was threatened. He's on the threshold. I mean, after this fight was when he came back home and his house was firebombed, you know, the same year, you know. So
you
I
know,
enjoyed
my brother,
it.
I'm very reluctant to watch the various things of us on TV. Now, I recently got Amazon Prime. I had to get it for a program I was working with, and they offer a lot of things. I ain't trying to promote them, of course.
Right.
But there's a lot of things I haven't seen. There's a documentary on Jack Johnson. There's Bridgerton. I did see Lovecraft Country.
Oh, man. What did you think of that? What did you think of that? Man, I loved it.
I thought it was quite good. I thought it really, in a world, you know, what do they call it? Afrofuturism with a lot of history.
Yeah.
Emmett Till and, you know, Bessie Stringfellow. You know, that was the sister on the motorcycle. You remember
right.
that scene?
Right. Yes. Yes.
There are a lot of things. I haven't seen Bridgerton. I haven't seen Ma Rainey.
I've seen Ma Rainey.
Maybe because I'm sad about Chadwick Boseman.
Yeah.
But I'm reluctant to see things like that. I'd rather watch something, to be honest with you, with nothing but white folks. Maybe this is a terrible thing to say because I don't too much care what happens to them. But if it's a black character, then I can't enjoy it.
Yeah, you know their
especially
demise.
When the story is not written by us.
Right,
you know?
And their demise. But I'm going to tell you, check out Ma Rainey and the performance of Chadwick Boseman. Check out Ma Rainey.
It's good.
Yes. The other thing is that Hank Aaron died today.
Oh, really?
Hammer and Hank, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, I'm from Milwaukee. Well, you know I'm from Milwaukee, so, yeah. And, you know, I met Hank Aaron.
And now
as
living
a kid.
In Atlanta, where he had such a big
exactly.
impact.
Exactly. You know.
Wow.
Yeah, Hank Aaron. Yeah, he died today, 86 years old. And, man, I remember as a kid going to the Braves game at Milwaukee County Stadium. And of course, every kid wanted to be Hank Aaron. You know, I'm Hank Aaron. You know, so.
Well, I grew up in L.A., so I was a bit of a Dodger fan. I don't recall seeing him. I don't recall seeing Willie Mays. I do remember seeing Willie Davis. I don't know if Willie Davis didn't have the fame
right.
that some of those other outfielders did, but he was fast. They used to call him the three dog.
Yeah, I remember
you know,
Willie Davis.
Doesn't have the impact in the black community that it did when we were coming up.
No, not at all. Not at all. Although there's still some brothers. I mean, I remember when they talked about brothers in baseball and the lack of brothers in baseball. And they've been talking about that for some time. That's
yeah,
why they.
Yeah, but listen, check this out. This is what I almost laugh when I hear this. When they say there's no or very few black players in baseball, and yet you got all these brothers from the Dominican
That's right.
Republic.
Exactly.
They're blacker than you and me.
Exactly. That was the point I'm going to make. Yeah, they are. And from and not just from the Dominican Republic, from Venezuela, and even in those countries.
Panama.
Yeah. Even in those countries where being light and bright and damn near white is revered, and being dark-skinned is, of course, diminished, you know. But these cats are athletic because it is that DNA. And these guys are good. They are good.
Well, I'll tell you, since we're talking about – we drifted, brother. We're talking about sports. It's all interrelated. You know, I'm very, very disappointed in the lack of black hires in NFL coaching positions.
Definitely. Definitely.
And why aren't the players raising hell about that?
You know, I think the NFL, as far as players are concerned, is one of the weakest. And it should be the strongest, but it's one of the weakest. In fact, their union itself, in fact, their contracts and pay are the worst.
Why do you think they're the weakest of all the major black sports organizations?
I think that if there ever really was a plantation mentality, and I ain't, you know, and I'm just analyzing this from my perspective, you know.
Of course.
If there ever was a plantation kind of mentality, it's football. Yeah. You know, just shut up and run the ball or block or tackle. And there's not a lot of cohesion, even though in football, that's what you need. It's more important than in football. Than any other sport, because an individual in other sports, particularly like basketball, like Michael or Magic or even now LeBron, you know, they can take over. But in football, you need those 11. And each one of those 11 has an assignment that he must carry out to make the play successful, you know. But yet, they get paid the less and they risk more. They risk, you know, permanent injuries, you know. I got Bill Roten's book, or it was a gift to me, The Million Dollar Negro, you know, Million Dollar Slave, excuse me, Million Dollar Slave, you know. And there was one time, man, they were going to do the, I know they do the combine in Indianapolis where they measure your jumping ability, your reflexes, your muscles, your mass and all that kind of stuff, you know, just like what happened during our captivity.
Of course.
But then they had a televised, Renoco, they had a televised players for, what's your call team? You know, you know, is where you develop a team and each week there's statistics, you know, I even won one time. But anyway, it was just like a slave auction. It was just like an auction, you know? Mm-hmm. In fact, they got so much backlash from it, they never did it again, you know?
Okay.
Your fantasy team, to build your fantasy team, you know? And they say, here he is, let's take a player for instance, running back, and his brother's name, and then everybody started bidding on him and raising. I mean, and I know.
And yet, no, go ahead, my brother.
No, and I was going to say, I know that a lot of our people, you know, we see it, we know it, but we kind of cringe and look the other way and allow it to continue.
How much do you think things are changing, brother? What is your perspective in general? I'm talking about American society and black people in it. And you know, since you're in Georgia, I want to ask you about the mayor of Atlanta. I want to ask you about Stacey.
Sure.
I want to ask you about these new senators.
Sure.
I want to ask you about the Ahmaud Arbery case. You know, it sounds like you're going to get interviewed today.
And man. I see that. I see that. I'm going to be on the hook.
That's how it sounds to me.
I'm going to be on the hook. Well, listen, man, I tell you, just like I text you, man, you know, I always appreciate, I always look forward to seeing you.
We're brothers.
And talking to you.
We're brothers.
you know. And from the moment that I saw you on Brother LeGrand's tape, you know, and hearing you then. And
oh,
then,
don't go there, man. Oh, no, please.
It's great.
I would pay you money to erase that from your memory bank. I'll tell you something positive that's happened since I've seen you last, which
okay.
has been a while.
It's been a while, yeah, it has been. Yeah.
I've developed, you know, I reconnected with Sister Bayina Bello.
Yes.
I got her books.
Yes.
And I'm going to do a big interview with her
right.
next month. We're going to have
right.
a conversation.
Right.
In fact, that's one of the things that I want to do this morning is talk a little bit about some of these upcoming events I'm going to be participating
yes.
in.
Yes.
And Ivan Van Sertima's birthday is January 26th, so I want to talk about Ivan some. But otherwise,
okay.
brother, we can...
No, that's great because I was going to definitely talk about that because I did see it. In fact, I was trying to find it, the one-on-one with you and Bayina Bello. I was trying to find that. But I know you'll send it to me so I can announce that.
I'll send it to you.
Yeah, so I can announce that, you know, on the program. Believe me. In fact, she has been on a couple of
times. In fact, I'm going to send it to you now. I don't know
okay.
if you'll be able to access it.
Okay, we'll see. We'll see. But, yeah. Oh, man, that's going to be great. Oh, man. And
you know,
and
brother, I cut you off in your announcements. You were talking about Sam Cooke.
Oh, yeah.
And then Hank Aaron. I fear that I cut you off.
No,
man.
No. Oh, no, no. I just wanted to make sure I got those two in. No. And like I said, I do another round of announcements and the lineup that is happening here. But I want to get into the conversation. I can't get you often. So when I do get you, I want to take as much time for our listeners to listen to you and hear you. And hopefully some of them will, you know, call in and ask you questions or if they got comments or concerns. And so I want to make sure that happens. But I saw that it was Sam Cooke's birthday.
Yeah.
And then... just thumbing through, I just caught a thing that Hank Aaron had
How old would Sam Cooke be today? What year did you say he was born?
He was born, Sam Cooke was born in 31. Oh, man.
Oh, he was a young man.
Yeah, oh, yeah, when he died at 33. Shoot.
Here's my question. He died at 33. I was having this conversation a few days ago. Malcolm, Martin, I believe Medgar Evers, Patrice Lumumba, were all taken from us in their 30s. Even Marcus Garvey was only 53 when he died. So the question I was posing, and of course it's pure speculation, is how much their views would have evolved.
That's a good question.
Changed with the passage of time.
That's a good question, yeah. And but also too, Brother Baba Brunoco, how much influence would they have had had they allowed to live and bring to the attention of all this madness, you know. You're just like Dr. King, you know. People speculate on Dr. King a lot because, you know, he is hailed. His birthday, is, you know, it's a national holiday.
Yeah.
There's King Day this past Monday where everybody's supposed to, you know, engage in community service and introspection. And
remember the dream, huh?
Yeah, remember the dream, you know. But I played the more revolutionary Dr. King stuff that I can remember, and I talked about that and the kind of man that Dr. King was. And
he was a revolutionary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So many of our heroes need to be reexamined again. I remember Dr. Clark saying that about Booker T. Washington, for example.
Mm-hmm.
That we have images of our heroes. In fact, quite often, as you know, other people create our heroes for us.
Right.
And create not only that, but also create an image of our heroes that we are oftentimes not allowed to deviate from. Dr. Mm-hmm. King was a very, as you know, carefully monitored the African liberation movement
right.
on the continent itself and paid tribute to Marcus Garvey. Said Garvey's one of the greatest men we've ever produced. We never hear that about Dr. King.
No, you sure don't. You sure don't.
Snippet where he talks about Black is beautiful. You can go to YouTube and find it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I suggest it to the listeners all the time, man. If you want to hear the ancestors speak, or even the contemporaries like yourself, go to YouTube. Put in that brother or sister's name, and believe me, you'll be surprised and really happy to see what comes up. You know, you can hear... You can hear George Washington Carver, you know, and you know what happened to him. He got neutered, you know, But that's why you hear his voice the way that it is. But you can hear him. You can hear Garvey. You know, you can have all the ancestors speak, you know. So, yeah, go to YouTube. But, I mean, you know, I think that Dr. King especially was moving into there. I always say when I talk about Dr. King, about what he said to Harry Belafonte, I believe I'm trying to integrate my people into a burning building. And I believe that he understood that this is too maddening. This is too insane. You know, and that's why I believe that he was changing his philosophy. He was definitely looking at, what do you say, the three things of war, poverty, and racism to really try to affect those in those particular areas. And that's when, of course, they had to get rid of him. You know, just like you said, integrating a lunch counter and a toilet seat and sitting on the bus, that wasn't no economic issue. In fact, he said it increased revenues for Caucasians. So instead of saying you can't stay here and eat the sandwich while I charge you $5 for it, no, come on, sit on down here, you know.
Let me ask you a question about perspective and also clarity. Do you think, I'm talking about terminology now, sometimes referred to as integration, and then other people will call that period of struggle for equal rights. Mm-hmm. Do you think they are one and the same? They're inseparable. What is your view towards that? I mean, words are very powerful.
Yeah,
and I wonder if the integration or integration movement is accurate.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, I often said that we should not use the word integration, because what integration means is that you take what I have, I take what you have, and we bring it together. And we respect what each other's bringing to the table, and we move forward because of what qualities and
so what term should we use for that period? Civil rights movement, what term do we use for that?
Well, assimilation, forced assimilation, and so forth, our wanting to be a part of the American dynamic, the American dream, American exceptionalism. That's how I look at it. You know, because I wasn't down with King. I was down with Malcolm and later the Black Panther Party and Republic of New Africa. I weren't hardcore members of them as a teenager, you know, but I went to a few meetings and so forth. So I had a little bit of understanding, you know.
Well, you know, we're talking about films and we're talking about the movement. There's also an upcoming film about Fred Hampton.
Yes, I saw a trailer.
What do you think of that?
Oh, man, In fact, I think it's the Judas, the brother that turned them in.
Judas and the Black Messiah.
Yeah, exactly. Like Judas and the Black Messiah. You know, met Fred Hampton's son, and talked with him a few times. In fact, the last time was in Philadelphia at the Locks Conference. And, you know, good young brother. You know, I think that Fred Hampton, at the time of his assassination, was growing in his popularity and in his persona as a leader, you know. And so from the standpoint of Europeans making sure they take somebody out before somebody grows too damn big, that was a situation there, I believe. You know, it's very, very unfortunate, you know. But, you know, that's what happens. I think now, though, Baba, is that the European is so entrenched. This situation here is so solidified that they don't worry about dissenting voices like like me and you and others. You know, I don't believe. You know,
Why would you say that?
I would say that because they have such a grip on the minds of our people. And there's so many of our people who will attack us, who will attack those who are African-centered, those who are will attack those who have a mindset that is outside of what Europeans allow or they feel is the norm. See, and so they feel that they got that such a stranglehold, as I like to say, a vice grip on the minds of our people. And if you know
what do you What do you think of the sister, the young sister who did the port the other day? There's so many people to talk.
Oh yeah,
so
yeah.
Many white folks.
Yeah, I think it was nice. It was beautiful. I mean, you know, it's not revolutionary, but it's once again it calls for what has happened because of Trump and the great divisions that he has brought, you know, and so here's another opportunity and a voice that is ours about healing and about coming together. And to me, Baba, is that this society has never done that. You know, this society has never wanted that. Caucasians don't really want that. They give lip service. They give lip
All
service
right.
to that.
Well, let me ask you something else then. We're talking about the media now. One thing that's very, very clear to me is when I'm looking at commercials, I see so many black-white relations.
Man, I swear.
It's almost unusual to see a black man and black woman together.
It is.
And that is consistent across the board.
Yes.
And that's very disturbing to me.
Very. Very disturbing, you know, and most you see is a sister with a Caucasian man. Every now and then you will see a black man and a Caucasian woman, you know, American African and a Caucasian woman, but a lot of sisters with Caucasian men. You know, I did a thing where
I see plenty of the other side too, man.
Do you? Okay. Well, yeah. I'm
sensitive to it.
Yeah.
Being a black man,
yeah,
I strongly believe that black men and black women need to be together.
I know you do.
We can't do that basic thing.
Yeah, I know you do.
What are we even talking about?
Yeah, you know? Yeah, I know. Yeah, and in fact, that's why my song is Brother Gary Taylor, "Loving My People," because I know song at the break, because I know that's what you do. You love us, and you love black women. From the many times I've seen. You know, your post on Facebook and your flowers and so forth. And I say, because I love us too, man. I really do. But just like I said, it bothers me because when you are a constant TV watcher and then you see this and you see this consistently, you know, you obviously it's the norm, you know. That's
do you know, sometimes,
say.
Brother, I think that we are, you and me, many people in our generation are kind of like dinosaurs. That the way we see the world is sometimes I fear that it's becoming outdated or obsolete. Our views about race and gender and class, everything.
Mm-hmm.
I really wonder how much that is going to fade away with us.
Yeah.
You ever think about that?
Just to a degree, but I feel that what's most important for us is to be independent, self-determining, you know, liberated and sovereign. And I know that if we cannot be that, you know, the greatest thing that we need to have right now is African unity, Pan-Africanism, you know, and yet we can't be that because especially if you are constantly, you know, bombarded like we are 24/7, 365 with images and notions of our inability and our inferiority and how to some degree we should be so thankful to be a part of this American dream.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, we should
be so thankful. I tell you what else amazes me is that black people aren't more angry than we already are.
Yes. Yes.
You would think that we'd be pissed off.
Yes.
And not just saying, oh, I'm so happy to be here in America.
Right.
It's the greatest country in the world.
Right.
And, you know, let's all come together and, you know, we need unity. We are Americans and this is such a great country and don't you just love it? Oh, man.
That's what they do. That's what they, and unfortunately our people feel that.
Do they?
Yeah.
The masses of our people really feel that way, you think?
I believe they do. I believe they do, unfortunately. And because a lot of them, they don't listen to scholars and historians. They don't listen to organizations that are challenging the system or individuals that are challenging the system. You know, the majority of our people, you know, we're a fringe. I just I hate to admit it. I would love for us to be the rule as opposed to the exception, you know, but we are, we're fringe, and I'm going to keep talking about it and fighting for it and advocating, you know, because I want us to be free. I want us to be self-determined. I want us to be sovereign. I want us to make our own decisions. I want us to be independent of Caucasians' involvement in our lives, period. You know? And I know that for us here, it's going to be a very tough and daunting, you know, objective, because this place, the whole idea works on your mind, and that's what we are battling. We are fighting for the minds of our people, and our people's minds are messed up.
Do you think Africans in America, what you call American Africans,
right,
have a greater sense of duty and responsibility towards liberating the African world than other groups of black people do?
You know, I say this, I would hope so, because we are the most technologically...
Why would you say that? You would hope so.
Because we are the most technologically advanced Africans on the planet. We are the ones that can really help, and we should help liberate Africa. We should just put down all the material bull, put on all the other stuff, go to the continent and say, brothers and sisters here, I'll come to help. Not like we did back in Liberia. Oh, hell no. I ain't coming here thinking I'm better than you. I'm coming here realizing that we have a land mass and we have resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they shown the hell damn it don't want to pay for, Dr. John Henry Clark, you know. And so therefore, if we kick out the Chinese, kick out the Europeans, kick out the Koreans and whoever else, and manage our own land, and kick out the despots, all those neocolonialists, all those traitors, all those individuals who have sold us, kick them all out and control our land and now be players in the world instead of pawns. And that's what we need to be, players in the world instead of pawns, that which we have become.
I remember on my first trip to Ethiopia, I've been back, I think, four times now. Ethiopia is a very rich country in terms of history and heritage, as you know. So I was delighted to go there, and I gave a lecture at the University of Bahadur, the history department. It was a big honor for me. And I gave a lecture, not a presentation, on the history of Ethiopia, of all things. Believe it or not, these brothers and sisters asked me to give a presentation in Ethiopia on the history of Ethiopia. I thought that was very ironic. I did it. I thought I threw down. None of the students responded. I said, who has a question? Nobody raised their hand. And it was obvious.
They didn't know.
That in spite of the fact that I thought I gave a brilliant presentation, I didn't connect with them. So I said, look, I was a historian for a tour group. Many of the tour group was there. And I said, if you're not going to ask me a question, I'm going to ask you a question. And I told them, first of all, I said, when I do presentations on Africa, I generally start by asking people, what do you think of when you think of Africa? And I get three consistent answers. I get a lot, but three never fail: wild animals, poverty, and disease. And you could tell those students were pissed. They were indignant. They said, basically, you mean to tell me that's what people think of when they think of Africa? I said, in general, yeah. Including African Americans? I said, yeah.
Yeah, because that's what you see.
So, I said, now tell me, what do you think of when you think of African Americans? And the place was just electrified. All those students who didn't have a question for me, all at once had something to say. And they basically said, when we think of African Americans, we think of people who were taken away from Africa, enslaved, won their freedom, and now we want to know why you turned your back on Africa. Electricity. So I turned to my group, because dialogue, as you know, is so important. Communication,
yes,
talking to each other.
Yes.
That's what we're doing now.
Exactly.
So my group said, look, y'all seem to think we're rich. We're not. Many of us spend our life savings for this special trip to Africa.
That's right.
Another person says, well, if we give you something, because it's a very poor country, how do we know you're going to spend it for the liberation of Africa and not just get a Mercedes, which I thought was kind of ridiculous. But the last comment was, I'll never forget, I don't feel like I owe Africa anything because your ancestors sold my ancestors into slavery.
I hate that.
And many of us believe that.
Exactly.
You haven't done
that.
No research now. You haven't done any, you haven't collected data. But I would be willing to bet you that if you ask the average African walking on the streets of Atlanta or Los Angeles or Brooklyn, they would say, yeah, they sold us. Why do we believe the worst of ourselves? Yeah. Why are we prepared to believe the worst of ourselves? And how does that impact our relationship with Africa? Those are profound questions.
Yeah. And the fact is, and I know a friend of mine, one of my good brothers, fellow firefighter, Chicago, he's, you know, it seems like he's saying you always blaming white folks. You're always blaming the white man. Yeah, I am, because they are at the root of the problem. Yeah. And then of course, you know, he's like, you know, you're always blaming Caucasians and that was our personal responsibility. I said, you know, the bottom line is that Europeans work on our minds. Europeans want to make sure they have a stranglehold on our minds. Because if you control a man's thinking, you don't have to worry about his actions. If you control his mind, his body will go as you say it, or you dictated that it goes, you see. And so, you know, and I hate this term. I don't know about you, but I hate it. We're our own worst enemy. I can't stand it. I even had to check an elder one time, and I, you know, graciously apologized, you know, sincerely. But I said, I'm tired of hearing
why
people
does
say.
Why does that bother you so much?
The reason why it bothers me is because we don't acknowledge what has happened to us. We think this is our fault. We're our own worst. In fact, we have to understand what the enemy is. And then when you understand what the enemy is, then we say that we're our worst enemy. That word right there, we're our own worst enemy. That means that there's nothing badder than us against us, or us doing to us what we have done to us. And not understanding that basically we have been directed to do to us what we have done to us. We have been manipulation.
Baba Oshie, what does that say about us? That other people are able to manipulate us to the extent that we'll do anything they want us to do in terms of engaging in self-destructive acts? Does that imply that we are stupid or naive or innocent or what?
And to a degree, it does.
Wow.
Into a degree, it does. Because we fail to, you know, look outside of the imposed boundaries that Europeans have placed upon us. We fail to look outside of that, to look at the European for who and what they are and what they've done to us. You know, that we just go along to get along. In fact, you know, it's more important that I get mine. Because, you know, here in America, as you know, Baba, this is America. This is about individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. That's what America is. Individualism. I got mine. And if you ain't got yours, it's your fault. Because it's here to get.
I know the answer, but I'm going to ask you anyway. There was a report a few days ago, I forget, 4 or 5 days ago, about this brother who had been an activist in Baltimore for a long time. I guess kind of get the guns off the street, organize the hood, et cetera. And he was shot. How do you feel? And I know the answer, but I want you to say it anyway. How do you feel when you hear about these reports of black folks shooting other black folk in Chicago or Atlanta or everywhere? That's the white man's fault. That's white supremacy. How do you respond to that? Because I get that all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what's your answer? What's your response?
You know, here we're trained to behave in certain ways. You know, initially when we were brought here, you remember, Baba Minoko, they had to make this idea that we were happy to be in servitude to Caucasians. We were the happy, you know, captives, you know, and we would do everything and anything for them. And then, of course, once the captivity was over, now we lazy, no good, you know, designed perfectly for the prison industrial complex or the mass incarceration or convict
leasing. Yeah. But what about when we do these things to each other, when we pull the trigger? That's what I'm asking.
Well, I understand what you're saying. And of course, what happens is that
I'm not making a statement.
No.
I'm asking a question. I'm raising an issue.
Right. And it's just like what Dr. Chancellor Williams said on Tony Brown's Journal. You know, we have been instilled with so much hatred towards ourselves and each other that when we see, you know, ourselves, we hate who we look. We hate what we're watching. We hate what we're seeing. And so, therefore, they have no value, no human value. And I would kill them. I would take from them. You know, and because the murder of ourselves, nobody kills themselves on this planet like we do. Nobody. No other people on the planet kill themselves.
You seem to be suggesting that it's not our fault, that it's the Europeans' fault, that ultimately he pulls the strings and he controls us. Isn't that the ultimate?
To me, it is. Because to me, Rinoco, listen, if we truly were not influenced and dictated to by this system, do you think that we would automatically hate ourselves? Do you think we automatically, not the kind of people that we are, and want to destroy each other? You know,
there was a case, I think, a couple years ago. I may not have all the details right. About, I think it was in Detroit, and a sister had gone into one of these Asian-owned hair care places, I guess, to get some hair for a weave or something like that, and she was mistreated. In fact, she was literally manhandled.
Mm.
The community was, I'm sure you remember this.
Okay.
So the community was outraged.
Yes.
And they organized a boycott. I think some brothers may have even led it, stepped up to the plate.
Sure.
So the store owner, who was, you know, no dummy, reduced the price of his hair care products. I mean, the weave, the hair, whatever.
Yeah.
Really dramatically reduced it. And black people were literally fighting.
To get in there.
To get in there.
Yeah.
And spend that money.
Yeah.
Now, whose fault is that?
Yeah.
Tell me right now. Whose fault is that?
But, I've seen it firsthand because a sister was abused like that in this place. And this Korean owner, we didn't know at the time. Reason why we were not able to make an impact on our constant picketing and boycotting, and because of the same thing, there would be people waiting for our thing to end, because there was a certain amount of time that we did demonstrate, and they knew that waited to end because they could save $2 on some weave or some healthcare products or hair care products.
See, I believe, and I'm sure you believe too, that white supremacy, so-called white supremacy, white domination, nationalism, whatever,
right,
anti-black racism, whatever term you want to use, I don't think it can exist unless we feed it.
Mm.
Unless we say, okay, we're going to cooperate. We're going to give you our money. We're going to give you our children to miseducate. And shout out to Imwalima Baruti, you know, one of our great leaders in Atlanta.
Yep.
We're going to... whatever the case, we're going to keep that image of white Jesus on the wall. We're going to do everything that it takes to keep white supremacy going strong. So I'm saying that at a certain point in time, we become complicit in our own victimization.
Mm-hmm.
Am I wrong?
No, you're right. You're right. And we do it consciously. We do it consciously.
Consciously.
Yes. No, you're right.
You know, that's quite a statement there you're making, brother.
I know it is. But, in observing our people, because I love us, I know, just like you do, you know, but you just can't help, you know, seeing how we behave and how we react and how we, you know, will fall for the okie doke every damn time, you know. And that's why I've been yelling from this platform of an educational system every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. to 10 your time. But on the real, that we need an educational system run by us, particularly at a young age, to give our young brothers and sisters a foundation. Because once they've gone through this educational system here, by the time they get into middle, or definitely in high school, it's over. It's over.
Yeah, I agree.
You know?
I agree. My brother, don't you have to do a commercial break or something
sure
like that?
Do.
Take a pause for the call.
I got to take a pause for the calls, my brother. You own it. You're acting as a co-host. I love it. I appreciate it, man. So we're going to do that. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. My guest, of course, is Baba Brunoka Rashidi, who was a primary researcher who's been grounded because of the virus. And I know that's sad, but hey, he'll be back on the case. You stay with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Down in a braid, brothers with their afros taking center stage, watching as this culture slowly comes of age with a mind of its own. Yeah, mothers out in the yard hanging up her clothes, fathers playing with the kids, keeping them on the go. Neighborhoods feeding on the heart of its soul. And that's where my feelings live. Cause I love my people. The way they let it go on the dance floor. Ain't nobody gonna do it like us, no. I'm loving my people. Straight to the kitchen table. My heart's full of love, spirits in the flow. And I'm loving my people. Teachers off in the classroom giving up the love. Supported by that mom and dad who want that special touch. Little acts of kindness prove to mean so much. When we give what we know. Kitchen pots are banging, smell of soul food fills the air. You walk past the neighbor's house wishing you had dinner there. Better times for living when people seem to care about that place where they grow. That's why I love my people. The way they let it go on a dance floor. Ain't nobody gonna do it like us, no. I'm loving my people. Said I love my people.
I love, I love.
So from the stove, straight to the kitchen table. My heart's full of love, spirits in the flow. And I'm loving my people. Folks gather at the church early Sunday morn. Openly they sing and praise and gospel music's born. God gave us love enough with spirits free to run. Why can't we learn to love ourselves like we're the chosen one? Come and let me know how your life is doing good. May how the blessings flow through the neighborhood. Share with me that time of feelings understood in that place we call home. Cause I love my people. The way they let it go on the dance floor. Ain't nobody gonna do it like us, no. I'm loving my people. Say that I'm loving mine.
to the kitchen table. My heart's full of love, spirits in the flow. And I'm loving my people. Kitchen table, can't nobody do it like us now. I'm loving my people. Say that I'm loving my, I love, I'm loving my.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Thank you for being here. Get back to my guest, Baba Rinoko Rashidi. Baba Rinoko, you got some things that are going to be happening soon. You got, of course, with Bayina Bello next month, Dr. Bayina Bello out of Haiti. That's going to be a great conversation. I look forward to that.
Well, part of that, I've known Bayina for a long, Sister Bayina for a long time, Professor Dr. Bello for a long time. But really being there in Atlanta with you kind of reinforced how important she is. And, you know, like you, I love Black women, and I think Black women scholars have a lot to offer.
Yes.
And, you know,
yes.
They say when you, yes. I don't know where it comes from, maybe... Joe McCunyata, to educate a man, when you educate a man, you educate an individual. Well, if you educate a woman, words to that effect, you educate a nation. So we're going to do some Zoom stuff. Let me just go over these three big programs. The first one is at the end of this month. That's Friday, January 29th, and Saturday, January 30th. I'm going to return to the Nile Valley. Of course, it's going to be virtual, but I'm going to take the next 3 months. I do these Global African Presence webinars at the end of every month, the last Friday, first Saturday. I mean, last Friday and first Saturday of every month. So this month, next month, and the month after that, we're going to go through the dynasties of Kemet and Kush and going to show original photographs. I'm going to try to show about 1,200 original photographs from the museums, the tomb. It's going to be impressive. So that's Return to the Nile Valley. And all you got to do if you want information, you can go to my website, drrinoko.com, drrinoko.com. It's easy to find. Or email me, rinoko@hotmail.com. Or just go to Eventbrite and type in Rinoko. So that's the first program. That's this month. And then on February 7th, let me make sure that's the correct date. Sorry, February 6th, I'm going to do a program called Great Black Historians. I'm going to go back in time, and I'm going to pay tribute to the great pioneer African scholars, you know, David Walker, Henry Highland Garnett, Delaney and Blyden and Jay Rogers and George G.M. James and William Lil Hansberry and Shaikhan Tijopan Tansoy up till today. So okay. I'm going to do that. That's February 6th. That's a Saturday. Mm-hmm. And, of course, again, you can be in touch with me, rinoko@hotmail.com. And then on February the 12th, a Friday evening, we have a conversation with Bayina Bello. We're going to get real basic. Like, why? What is the Haitian Revolution? Mm-hmm. Why is it important to us? What were the consequences of it? How has Haiti been made an example of? And particularly, we want to talk about the role of women in the Haitian Revolution. That's something that Sister Bayina is very passionate about, and we're going to promote her book. So I encourage all the listeners, go to Eventbrite, type in Rinoko, go to my website, drrinoko.com, email me direct That's probably the best bet. Renoco@hotmail.com. And after the show, you can even after our conversation, I should say, because it's really not a show. It's a conversation. You know what I call it?
I call it a program. See,
there you go.
Because I'm reprogramming. I never call it a show. Number one, I'm not entertaining. And even if I am, I want to be informative.
After the program, people can, after this morning's enlightenment, you can always call me at 323-803-8663. That's 323-803-8663. And Baba Oshie, a terrible thing is happening just within the last few days in particular. And this is terrible. I'm almost getting used to not being able to travel.
Is that right? That is a terrible thing.
Just getting used to Zoom and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, a few years ago, literally, I traveled to 27 countries in one calendar year. Imagine that.
Wow.
27 countries in a 12-month period. And now the idea of that is just kind of incomprehensible. Man.
Yeah. Sounds like real tiring physically. Yeah.
Well, maybe there's a time and a season.
Yeah.
And this is one of the things I think we want to emphasize, too. I want to emphasize. What ASCAC, I was active in ASCAC for a long time, and I still admire a lot of the things that they emphasize. And one of the things they used to talk about, maybe they still do, is an intergenerational transmission of wisdom. We're elders now.
Yeah.
You know, we love Dr. Clark and Dr. Ben and Ivan and Ace, et cetera, but they're ancestors now. We are the elders, whether we like it or not.
Right.
Whether we are able to rise to the occasion or not. So we have to also be thinking constantly about transmitting this information, making sure that it's not lost, that other people are able to pick up the baton and run with it.
Yeah.
These are very important things to me at this stage in my life.
Yeah, I know. I agree. Mine too, man. Because we're both around the same age, and the fact that we are still at it and been at it for number of decades is a testament to our longevity. And that we believe that we don't go into retirement. We continue to advocate. We continue to push and inform. You know, I got a caller, Sister Nabantu. Good afternoon.
Hey, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Go ahead.
Good morning, sister.
Oh, she went off. So well, she'll get back.
Sir.
I got another caller, 602. Good afternoon.
Yes, Brother Osha. Good afternoon, and good afternoon, Dr. Renoco.
Good morning, brother.
Yes, it's Brother Marcos here. I just, before I make a comment, two comments, when you were talking about those ads that they run on TV, those interracial ads, that's really not perpetrated by the white power structure, That's really being pushed by these liberals, these Jews, They're the ones really pushing that agenda, because really the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, they don't want to mix with black people. See, so these Jews, they're the ones that push that integrationist agenda. And in reference to the black people, when you talk about black self-destruction, the black self-destruction is, yes, mainly caused by the white power structure that feed that negative information into the minds of black people. You see, that negative narrative they put out that black people internalize and turn it against ourselves. You see, so yes, you are correct. Brother Oshi is still the white man, as Dick Gregory said. If I wake up with a headache this morning, hey, it's the white man. See, so. So we got to put the blame where the blame lies.
That's right.
I think that this year, I think we're going to make a pivotal change this year. We must. We have to. You see, we have all the information at our disposal. We have great scholars like the brother here that we have tonight. We have all the information now at our disposal. So now it's time for us to organize our economic and psychological life. Because without that economics, without an economic base, you know, we just barking up the tree. You know, so we must get that economic base. But again, that psychological correction has to take place in order for us to develop that economic base. But I think that conditions are going to drive us to that point. Anyway, good brothers, please keep on, keep it on. Dr. Renoka, I see your work. It is amazing because some of the things I see, I was shocked. I never even realized we are black people. So
thank
keep
you,
on keeping on, brothers. Thank you so much. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Bob. Thank you. Thank you, Brother Marcus. Sister Navon,
even
too.
When I wake up in the morning with a headache, it's the white man's fault.
That's right. It is his fault all the time. I love it. Mama Navon, too, how you doing? Good afternoon. Ooh, Mama Navon, you got a lot of feedback there.
Oh, let me, okay. Sorry. My son has class the same time as your show.
Okay.
I just had a couple of comments. You guys jumped around quite a bit.
Why? You didn't want us to jump around? No?
No. You guys hit on a lot of stuff. You know, first thing I remember, you talked about the biracial commercials. Mm. And I've been collecting these commercials, starting with Cheerios, Nissan, Toyota, Robinhood, Tops, T-Mobile, Beauty Mattress, Fidelity, Fresh.com, and so on. And I want to write them a letter. And I think that we can talk about it, but I think we need to do something about it. You know, file complaints, because I don't see enough black families on these commercials. I'm talking about mother, father,
right,
and children.
Right.
And when you do see children... When you do see children, they're usually biracial. You don't see any melanated children,
right.
Not very often at all.
Right.
So I think we need to do something about it and not just talk about it.
Well, but Mama Nabantu, and I agree with you, because what is it saying to the future? Because that's what it's about. That's what commercials are always about, projecting into the future.
Yeah, they know that.
And what it says, I mean, even though Caucasians' numbers are dwindling, and I know many of our people take some stock in the fact that, well, pretty soon their numbers will be this and then we can be in control. Oh, no, stop it. It doesn't matter if Caucasians are in the numerical control. They're going to be in control. They never were the numerical number in control in South Africa and other parts of the world, but yet they're still in control. Mm-hmm. It'll be the same way here. But what it constantly says to us is, where are we and what happened to us? We got amalgamated. Well, we got, you know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know, we got to keep the black family up front.
Uh-huh.
And that's not happening, you know, especially when you see these commercials and you see our children watching this saying, oh, this is okay. I can get me a white girl. I can get me a black, a white man. It's okay. Mm-hmm. It's common. And so it becomes a natural thing because that's what they see all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you guys talked about the black on black crime and, I think that we need that part of that problem is that, you know, we still got the chains on our minds. And then my question is, how many students have been educated from an African-centered perspective are killing each other? And then miseducation, I think, is part of the BOB, black crime,
mm-hmm.
and also even suicide. And mm-hmm. then going on to Stacey Adams and Keisha Bottoms, they're not Pan-African. Are they for reparations? I don't think so.
I don't think so.
So how do we get people to see that the only option for generations of Africans to come is to unite Africa, whether American Africans choose to move there or not. And I noticed that all the Jews do not live in Israel, but wherever they are in this plan, they support it. Many who live in the United States are allowed to vote for the leaders in Israel. Mm-hmm. So that's my comment today.
All right, Mama Nabantu, and thank you. Mama Nabantu is with the Pan-African Federalist Movement. She is one of the directors here in the North America. And of course, the Pan-African Federalist Movement, its whole desire is to unite Africa, United African States, before this decade is out. And I'm definitely down with that. Of course, one of Baba Renoko's best friend, Brother Sangor, is Brother Sangor? He's the executive director, correct?
I don't know what Sangor is, man. Yeah, I just know he's actually involved.
Yeah.
Sister Nabantu can tell us.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
He's the field director for North America.
Okay, field director for North America.
His task is to organize local coordinating committees across all 50 states.
Okay.
We all support him in that wherever we are.
Right on. Good. You want to take another caller, my brother?
Of course. Okay. Thank you, my sister.
All right. We'll get Bama Dabantu back on. 646-646, good afternoon. 646-646, good afternoon. I'll catch up with you later. Okay. Montgomery, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brother Ocean. Good afternoon, Brother Naroko. How are y'all today?
Oh, Brother Luss, I'm well. Thank you. Always good to hear from you, man.
All right. Brother Rashidi, I have a good question for you. I think that you could help me. You know, you have been well-traveled throughout the world now. Has anyone ever asked you to try to be an agent of allowing an opportunity for those of us here in North America to be able to link up with those on the continent? You know, I am not fortunate to have traveled at all very much other than here in the contiguous United States, but I'm always curious to know, you know, you had mentioned about the students that you had asked questions of, and about us and vice versa here in this country about them. Is there a way or some sort of agency that we can go through to be able to link up with each other and to establish a network with each other in on the continent? Because I'm always curious to know what are some of the people who are like me in Ethiopia, right? Or may have an idea or ideology similar to mine in Ethiopia or in Ghana or in Sudan. Is there a way to do that at all?
Well, I suppose there is, but I think a lot of things are just waiting for us to do it. You know, a lot of us are Garveyites. We call ourselves Pan-Africanists, Garveyites, et cetera, et cetera. We believe in a global unity of African people with Africa as the base. And we think ultimately that's the answer for African people. Garvey formed this organization, as you know, the UNIA and ACL, and he was asked why he did it. And he basically said, I looked around for the black man's army, his navy, his men of big affairs, and could not find them. And so I decided to help create them. Well, in many ways, that still exists today. So many things are possible if we just get to it. I think black people, African people, more than any people that I've studied in history, have a kind of a messiah complex. Somehow we expecting somebody to come do for us, a white man, somebody coming down from the sky, a historical figure, somebody to lead us by the hand, tell us what to do, better yet, to do it for us, even think for us. And so, yeah, we could easily do that, have an international network of African people. And I guess we have fragments of something like that right now, but we could definitely expand it. So what are we waiting for? And not just Africa, but what about black people in the Pacific Islands? For example, there's a brutal struggle going on right now in West Papua.
Yes.
Indonesia's
yes.
Irian Jaya.
They're
basically committing genocide against
right.
our people.
Yes.
What about black people in Brazil?
Yes.
I mean,
they're getting
in other
killed.
Words, I'm saying that we need to reach out and do a more effective job. Now, early on, not to run on and on, but I want to make this comment to kind of tie it up. You know, Brother Oshie and I were talking about, and this has been something I've been thinking about lately, what is the obligation, what is the duty of African Americans, the descendants of people taken out of the door of no return, what is their duty or obligation to African liberation? We are probably the wealthiest group of Africans in the world. And this may sound like something a lot of people really don't accept this, but it's real. As messed up as it is here in Babylon, we have a greater degree of freedom of speech probably than any other group of Africans in the world. What we seem to lack is vision and organization.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, brother, we could easily do that. What are we waiting for? Is my question.
So if I understand you, it's not necessary for us to expatriate at all, as long as we establish some sort of line of communication with, say, those of African descent who live in Belgium, or those who are of African descent that live in Argentina. It's just a matter of creating that network.
Yeah, that's
you don't
what
have
I think.
To expatriate.
I think that if you want to go home, if you want to live in Africa, if you can bring something that's going to allow you to contribute, I think that's great. But even Marcus Garvey, I don't think, advocated that all Africans needed to go back to Africa. In fact, Garvey said something to the effect, some of us ain't doing no good here.
And there'll so be no
go
good
Africa
there.
And continue to mess up.
Yeah.
I think that we need to organize. And we need to organize with Africa as the key. And that Africans all over the world need to feel their African identity and feel like we are connected, and to feel like we will never be really strong and liberated and sovereign, as Baba Oshi talks about, in America, unless Africa is strong. Africa is the key.
Africa is the key.
And that's why we spend so much emphasis trying to reclaim our sense of pride and dignity and wanting to identify with Africa. But now I'm preaching to the choir. Y'all know all that.
Yeah.
Thank you, brother. Thank you, Brother Rashidi.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brother Lus. Appreciate you, my brother.
All right. Thank you, brother.
All right.
That's Sister Nubuntu. That's just Mama Nubuntu that's got me all fired up now.
Yeah. Well, you know, she's from
Rinoco straighten up now.
She's from Oakland, man. You know, she's from that area.
Yeah, she's a
powerful
sister.
Yeah.
She's a powerful. 646. And we appreciate her.
Oh, no doubt. Oh, love her. 646-646. Good afternoon. Okay. All right. Once again, brothers, give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. My guest today is the world traveler and primary researcher, Dr. Rinoco Rashidi. Talk to me about some more things that you are involved in. I know you were just saying something earlier, if people caught it, that it's like, wow, I'm not traveling anymore. I'm starting to get used to this, and I'm trying
to
dig.
This is the quietest month of February.
Oh, yeah, cup coming.
I've ever had.
Yeah.
Usually, you know, this is the busiest time of the year.
Right.
But
right.
Now it looks like it's going to be the quietest Black History Month I've ever had.
Yeah.
You know. So if a person wanted me to do something online, Zoom, StreamYard, you know, WebEx, whatever, you know, I'm very available, and I'm particularly interested in doing programs that involve young people, our children.
Yeah.
I gave a shout out to Baba Baruti. I remember visiting, I think it's the Akobin Institute.
Yep, exactly. Akobin Institute,
years
yes.
ago. I wish I had done more of that.
Yeah.
Now, perhaps more than ever, and I think it's good to be able to say that we are evolving and we are growing and hopefully getting better based on our experiences. But now that's a really big thing for me, you know, really trying to, I see so much potential with our young people.
Yeah.
And if we can nurture them, because I think a lot of folk in our generation, we've done a lot of what we're going to do. And I ain't all that optimistic about the generation after us.
Right.
But the
one before them. And that's the one I'm talking about, too.
The young one.
Yes.
Huh?
That's the one I'm talking about, too. The generation, not after us, but the one before them and before them. That's what I'm talking about. You know,
that
we could get them and we can set them on a solid foundation, infuse that knowledge of self in them, the concept of Pan-Africanism, the concept of loving themselves, loving their hair, loving the way they look, don't ridicule another brother or sister because their skin is darker, and all these things. If we can establish that, and also to establish the connection between us here or us in the diaspora and us on the continent, you know, to me, we didn't have it. Well, don't tell me I got to do something here. Okay. Just hold on. I know you can hear me, but those who are on the phone, and just hold on. Something happened here to no fault of my own. So, man. Just hold on, brothers and sisters. Just hold on. Okay, Renoco, you still there?
Yeah, I lost you for a moment.
Yeah. Something happened. With the technology sometimes, and sometimes what we're talking about, you know, that we don't control it, and so we were zapped off. So those brothers and sisters, if you would can redial 215-490-9832, and we'll resume the conversation with my good brother, Dr. Renoco Rashidi. But yes, you have documented the African presence around the world, you know, where dark-skinned people who look just like any brother or sister that you would see, you know, in your city, on your block, in your family, you know, that you'd be like, oh, man, they're from Micronesia, they're from Polynesia, they're from India, they're from Pakistan, they're from Vietnam.
Which brings up the question of African identity. You know, I've been doing this research for the better part of 50 years now, and I still don't have a precise definition for what is an African.
Yeah.
If humanity began in Africa, and we can all ultimately, I think everybody, whether they like it or not, whether we like it or not, trace their roots to Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Who is not an African?
Right.
Can we claim that anybody is an African? Are all black people African? Are all Africans black people? And these are fundamental questions that maybe it's impossible to develop a definitive answer for. But that's basically been my life in search of Africa and Africans. So,
yeah. And to me, it is a work that is necessary if we are to become a people that have a respect for themselves and respect for each other, that are inclusive. You know, I know that some people don't, you know, I had a discussion, don't want to say that Africa is the birthplace of humanity, because then that would say that Caucasians also come from that tree. Well, Jop explained it. Sheikh Anta Jop explained it, that yes, they come from that tree, but there's something uniquely different that happened to them because of that ice age, because of their transforming or mutating or whatever, how you want to call it, coming out of the ice age, coming out of Europe. There's something happened, and that a theory of development, a northern cradle and a southern cradle, caused this situation to happen, whereby we're still dealing with it to this day. And we'll probably deal with it, you know, until we change our minds about it, you know, because we can.
What does that mean when you say change our minds about it? What do you mean by that?
What by that, I mean, instead of bracing, saying all humanity, let us, you know, close ranks in our Africanness. Let us close ranks and basically state, Brother Noko, a statement is, are you in or are you out? You know, just like Dr. Clark said, we need the ability to include and exclude, which we don't have. But are you in? Because if you're in now, let's work. If you out, that's your choice. You chose to be part of a situation that has never and will never respect your life. But what
here's a question for you. This is a question. If Dr. Clark was still here, the number one question I would ask him, and I've been thinking about this for many years, that is, how do you end oppression without becoming like your oppressor? How do you end oppression without taking on the attributes of those who oppress you? And that's something I don't have a good answer for.
Right.
I don't want to have somebody's foot on my neck, but I don't want to be like that person. And is that what is required to end the oppression?
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. That's deep. Yeah. Because it that is required to end the oppression. And that's our problem. You know, there is no easy answer.
Transform one like that.
You know,
now, black folk, I think we would probably agree. At least this is my experience. I almost said we suffer from, and I'll continue that line of thought. We suffer from this burden of Ubuntu, of a sense of brotherhood and sisterhood, and prepare to embrace anyone. Black folk are the most forgiving folk in the world. You can do anything to us. And I didn't mean it. This person doesn't have a racist bone in his body. I've known this person for 50 years, and I know because he called you the N-word and all of the, he's really not. We'll come out and apologize. George Wallace, you know, art segregationist goes in a black.
Yeah.
To me, that's almost like a curse in a sense. Is it possible to change a people's cultural personality? Or is it just so simply so deeply ingrained in us that it just is what it is, and we are who we are?
Well, the thing is this, Papa, is that it is a curse in a world where evil is pervasive.
That's the problem.
See?
That's why I use that word curse.
Yeah.
Where evil is pervasive.
Because to me,
I know black people be telling me, I don't see any reason why I need to shop with another black person. I don't see any reason to have black friends.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see color. I don't see race. And why are you mad at me? Because I got that blonde and gave her all that money and she divorced me and took every penny I had. That's the kind of
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Very frustrating.
It is.
Because I'm a race man.
Right.
I don't hate anybody, but I love black people.
Right. But I love us.
I want to be with black people, and I want to be with a black woman, and I want to see black people successful.
Yes. I want to see us rise to the point of where when we were world teachers thousands of years ago, when people came and sat at our feet, and now no one wants to be in our vicinity. I don't give a damn if they don't want to be in our vicinity. I want us to love that environment. I want us to nurture and grow in that environment of helping one another, supporting one another, respecting one another, trusting one another. That's my vision for Africa. And it can't happen here, because in this environment, this is decadent. This is evil. You know, and the people
who run it. You think we all need to raise up and go back home?
I really do. I really do, Baba. That we need to get up out of here and go back home into an environment where brothers and sisters will embrace this. Even I understand Africa. Okay, I ain't naive. Okay, I understand Africa. I understand the European influence on Africa being colonized. The way they were being dogged out, the way they were, and in some cases still. I mean, if you look up Namibia, Southwest Africa, it's still being run by the Germans. If you look up South Africa, it's still being run by the Europeans, the Caucasians, the Boers, the Dutch, you know. So I understand all those things. But all of that can end. All of that will end once Africans embrace on the continent and throughout the diaspora who want to come and make Africa what it must be and what it should be, a place that is ours, that we can control, that we can, you know, if somebody wants something from Africa, they'll pay fair market value price for it and be fair. But I saw this piece and I played it on the program of this Caucasian named Howard Nicholas, I think his name is. His really name is insignificant. But he was doing a workshop with the PowerPoint behind him and so forth of why Africa must remain poor. You know, why Africa must, you know. And so his whole thing is that we must make sure that Africa and Africans remain in this condition, that they don't develop their resources. Even if they do, it's at a minimal level, but make sure they don't do production. They don't produce nothing. We must take these materials out of Africa and then produce things and then sell them back to Africans. You know, you've been to Africa many times, Baba, and so have I. And we've seen our brothers and sisters on the street, you know, I mean, you name it, it's on their head, and they're trying to sell it because there is no safety net. There is no government programs for them. You got to go out there and get it. And so they're selling everything, you know. Manuka, are you there?
I'm listening to every word, brother.
Okay. So
I didn't want to interrupt the flow.
Well, you know, well, I'm just like you, man. Sometimes we just go off, man. You know, we just, because of our passion and our love for our people, you know, it is sincere and it's committed, you know.
No, it's coming up, the birthday. I wanted to mention him before we go. One of our greatest scholars. We just had the birthdays of so many. Chancellor Williams.
Yeah, Dr. Clark.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Clark, Dr. Ben. And coming up is one of the greatest and somebody who I had a very close relationship. And I just wanted to acknowledge him. And that is Dr. Ivan Van Sertima.
Ah, yes.
Of course, Ivan was born in Guyana in South America on the 26th of January, 1935. And he is the author of They Came Before Columbus, and he was a founder and editor of the Journal of African Civilizations. I feel like it's important to acknowledge him and raise him up because I realize so many people even now don't know who he is or what he did.
Right.
You know, I took a group of relatively young people, late 20s, you know, to Mexico a couple years ago. These are Africans, conscious people, woke folk, I guess. And somebody asked me in the course of the bus ride, had I ever heard of this woman named Frances Welsing? And I almost started laughing, okay? And I started talking about Ivan and what have you. And it kind of shook me up. I think a lot of times we have these conversations and we assume
that
people know the basics of what we're talking about.
Right.
So sometimes I think we have to just give a refresher course and realize that there are new generations too. I need to get this information. I remain hopeful about 95% of the time. There are times when I really wonder if we've already been defeated and just too honorary, you know, to admit it. But what keeps me going, even in those moments of despair, because I think we all have them.
Yes.
I think we're human.
Yeah.
And we have doubts and fears and anxieties and frustrations, is what we have been subjected to. For hundreds of years, the rape, the slaughter, the dehumanization. And when you think about that, it's amazing that we're even here to have this conversation this morning.
Right.
The weaker people would have perished by now.
That's right. And not only that, the type of conversation that we're having, not wanting to be like anybody else, but be like ourselves and to reclaim and recapture and restore that. See, that's you're right, Baba. That's deep. You're right. To have this kind of conversation. You know,
so I want to remind people again, as we start to wind down, my webinar coming up next weekend. That's the 29th and 30th of January.
That's right. The return,
and it's
to, the Nile Valley.
To the Nile Valley.
Mm-hmm.
Go to Eventbrite, type in Renoko, RUNOKO, and register. Don't just say I'm great and you love me. I need your support. Go to the website, drrenoko.com, buy a book, a DVD, see some of the other programs. Remember Sister Baina Bello next month. Anybody can always email me at renoko@hotmail.com. Go to the website, drrenoko.com, drrunoko.com, or call me at some point. If email doesn't work, 323-803-8663. I got a lot of time in February. If you want to arrange a presentation of some sort, I'm sure we can work it out. But Oshie, what you're doing is good. And one of the things that I admire about you, and this is, I think, one of the most important things to keep in mind, you have been consistent.
I thank you.
I meet a lot of people. They brilliant, they bad, especially a lot of young people, but they lack consistency. This time next year, they might be talking about something altogether different.
Yeah.
You have been doing this for decades.
Yes, sir.
And I salute you because I know it hasn't been easy all the time.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And coming from you, I really appreciate that and respect that. And, you know, and what substantiates that, if I need any substantiation, is Baba Reba Kelsey. Dr. Kelsey was 94 years old. And, of course, met him when I first came in. I've been here in the Atlanta area now for 6 years. And, of course, established myself within the community that I want to be in, which, of course, is the conscious community, which is also a very fringe here in Atlanta, damn it. You know, but you know, networking with Mama Marimba Ani and Baba Kelsey and many other people, Baba Baruti and so forth, it's just been fantastic. But what they've said and what Baba Kelsey said, he says, what I see about you is that you've been consistent. You were, you know, and I appreciate that. But that's who I am, and that's my love.
No, that's one of the most important things. You can get tired. You can take a break. You can take a time out. You can go on holiday, but you can't give up.
Right.
Because once you give up, you become a part of the problem that we are struggling against, and you have not given up.
This is something that I will do till I expire, you know, until I make transition. I would try my best to put something on the minds of African people. What I loved was when I was on the fire department and on my off days, I worked in schools with young people, mostly in the public schools. And I didn't work in middle schools because middle schools were too tough. The kids were so rebellious and didn't want to hear what I had to say. And so the younger kids and the high school kids, because the high school kids, they understood that, hey, I got to get serious, you know? Mm-hmm. I can't play around. I'm supposed to be getting out of here in the next year or two or whatever, you know? And so, in fact, recent, this is a testament, and I appreciate it greatly. A brother wrote on Facebook because somebody had information and about some things that I had done with them back. He said, man, I learned that when I was back in high school with Brother Oshie, you know. So I was like, wow, thank you, man. You know, just like when that sister saw me and she said, you Brother Oshie, that's because of you. I'm a teacher, you know, and that's rewarding.
Tell me something, brother, before we get out of here. This is the beginning, but we didn't get to talk about it. What's it like in Atlanta right now?
Oh, wow.
Two new senators, you got Stacey Abrams, everybody's talking about her. What's up, man? What's the environment like?
Well, you know, exactly that the pandemic puts a damper on every damn thing. But obviously the feeling is good because it flipped this state, you know, and the work that Stacey Abrams did along with our mayor, Keisha Lance Bottoms, and I'm glad that she decided to continue to be the mayor and not take a position in Biden's administration, because I think that she's been good for the city, you know. Especially, I thought that she was courageous back in the time of the disturbance back in the summer, because she fired some folks, because these folks treated some people very badly. She fired that cat who shot that brother in the back, you know. So, I mean, I like Keisha, you know, Keisha Lance Bottoms.
So there's a sense of activism there? There's a good feeling in the black community there?
Well,
in Atlanta?
No. What it is a status quo being maintained, you know, that it's not as bad. We're still trying to make sure that we can find jobs for people. We're still trying to, you know, even though gentrification probably here in Atlanta is probably, I can't speak, I shouldn't say this about other cities because I really don't know, but I would say that it is really going full board here, you know.
Let me ask you something else. Now, you know, I've been in Atlanta a lot of times, but I've never been in other parts of Georgia. What are the black communities like in places like Savannah, Augusta? What are the other big cities in Georgia?
Well, that's the thing. That's the
Atlanta
thing.
Atlanta, a microcosm of the rest of the state as far as black communities are concerned.
Yes, just sometimes a little smaller and a little slower. And understand this, Baba. The reason why John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock won, not just because of the organizing of Stacey Abrams, which was key, but also, too, the foolishness of Donald Trump and the Republican Party. And also, too, the organizing of black votes matter. It was Black Votes Matter that did the organizing in the rural areas. Because like in Wisconsin, where we're only like 5% of the state's population, and we ain't outside of Milwaukee County or Madison, Wisconsin, you ain't gonna see us. But here, you travel all throughout this state, you're gonna see us. You know, you're gonna see us all the way down to Valdosta, Georgia. You'll see us all the way east to Augusta, all the way southeast to Savannah. You know, you will see us. You know, and in these rural areas, you will see us. But before, the rural people didn't vote because they felt they were intimidated. They felt it didn't matter and so forth. But the people organized them. And that's why that changed. Because when you looked at the election back in November, the long-haired chick, Kelly Loeffler, I can't stand her, man. Horse head chick. So she had won the election, and Raphael came in second, and Jones, who was the congressperson who Trump told Kemp that he should elevate him to U.S. Senator. But Kemp elevated Kelly Loeffler because she got money.
Let me ask you, man.
She's independently rich.
Really, really ignorant, you know, Black man there, really right-wing Trump supporter. I mean, they're like a fool. Who is this guy? You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Man, he is embarrassing.
You're talking about a disgrace.
Yes, he is embarrassing. He's embarrassing. He went to a Trump rally. You know how they do when in college, where they pick you up. And
I remember. I saw that, man.
Oh man, I said it's getting worse. Yeah,
I was almost hoping he was going to get coronavirus. I know that's a terrible thing to say. Just for being a fool.
Yep, for being a fool.
I mean, a house Negro to the extreme. Man. You know, he would have snitched back in the day.
Yep. He took that shit to the third level. I'm like, or farther, man. And, you know, and that's interesting because there was a period of time where, you know, you didn't really want to display Negroism publicly, you know, because we were starting in the 60s, you know, Black Power and getting together. So you didn't want to be, you know.
there's a Black chief of police somewhere in that area, too. And I remember him being interviewed after the brother was killed in the parking lot, defending himself, really justifying that.
Mm.
So it seems like in Georgia, you have a very progressive element.
Yes.
And then also a very conservative element. It seems like you have the whole.
You have the gamut. You know,
yeah.
Yeah, you do. You have the extremes of who we are. You got the community like that I embrace, the conscious community, and, you know. And then you have some people in the middle, wide swath of our people in the middle. And then you have the extreme Negroes, those who have been deeply affected by the Urugu virus, you know, and have a denial of who and what they are, and what is sickening, you know, that they. But you know, I tell you, I'm optimistic, and I know you are too. And I've heard you say it, you know, as bad as it looks, as bad as it sounds. I'm still believing in us. I still believe that, you know, there is a day and a time. And particularly, it doesn't happen, though, Renoco, as you know, by hoping, praying, wishing, marching, praying, voting. That's not how it happens. It happens because you, myself, and so many of others that put the work in to help make it happen, to try to put the something on the minds of our people to get us to think outside the imposed boundaries. I always use this analogy of the vice grip, that the European has a vice grip on our minds. And when you understand that tool, there's a knob at the end of the handle. And the turning of that knob is symbolic of acquiring knowledge of yourself. And the more knowledge you get, the better it turns. And then finally, the tension, and then you release it. And you can see the European, the cracker, for who and what they are. You don't challenge them because they suffer from cognitive dissonance. They believe they're superior. Ain't a damn thing we could do or say to prove otherwise. And anybody who says anything, I got that from that Franz Fanon quote, you know, about cognitive dissonance. But also, too, you had the Caucasian lady, D'Angelo, Dr. D'Angelo, who came up with the white fragility. When she was doing the workshops you know, when all, you know, Trayvon Martin, all these killings were happening, she was doing these workshops. And what she had noticed was the white folks didn't want to hear that shit. They believe that they're good, righteous people. They believe that they gave the world, you know, civilization. They gave the world Christianity. They gave the world governance, a monetary system. They believe all these things though that are good about them. So their attitude and ego is fragile. You know, they don't want to hear it. White fragility. And then, of course, then there's European or Caucasian or white hegemony. What's mine is mine, and what's yours is mine. You know,
that's their mentality.
That it is. And so when they operate like that, that's why I'm saying, Baba, don't waste our time. Don't even waste our time talking to them. Damn them. The most important thing that we need to do is organize and find out who's going to do what, how it's going to be done, when it's going to be done, you know, and so forth. That's what we need to do. Organize, you know?
Organize, organize, organize.
That's right.
Organization decides everything.
Everything, man. Listen, my brother.
Well, my brother.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed you, man. I know we're out of time.
Yeah.
But thank you for this conversation. Happy New Year, everyone.
You too. Right on, Bobby.
We're the ones we've been waiting for.
That's right. We are the ones.
Again, a person can always contact me, Renoco at hotmail.com. Go to Eventbrite, type in Renoco, go to my website. My brother, I appreciate you. Stay strong. Have a good weekend. I look forward to the next time.
Always, Baba Renoco. Brothers and sisters, Dr. Renoco Rashidi, my good, who I can honestly say is my good friend. I'm proud of it, man. You have a good weekend, man. All right. Brothers and sisters, I thank Brother Baba Renoco. Appreciate him. Love him for what he has done and what he continues to do in educating our people, presenting. Like I said, he is a primary researcher. He has gone to the far ends to document our presence in the world, you know. And, you know, there's other good primary researchers that I know. Manu Apem, I like to contact Brother Manu. And for what he has done. So there's some really good people that I thank, you know, who have influenced me. And I'm definitely thankful for the kind words that Baba Renoco, you know, said. Because I try. Mama Nabantu.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, I didn't know. No, I was on. I just came back on. I lost you for a minute.
I know.
Yeah. It's all good.
It's all good.
I appreciate the conversation that you and Renoco have just had, and I look forward to his program coming up with Diana.
Yeah, definitely. I'll be promoting those. I'll be talking about them, you know.
Okay.
You know. Baba, is it Brother Lusk?
Yeah.
Thank you for calling, man. I know I'm winding down, but thank you, man, for contributing to the program as well. I appreciate
it. As always, and I do concur with Brother Rashidi with the kind of type of work that you're putting on and your consistency. All the best in your endeavors, brother.
Well, thank you, man. I appreciate that because brothers like you, because you keep me informed, man. Yeah, you do. I love it. You keep me informed. It's always the things that are happening that you're bringing my attention to that I want to hear about, that I want to know more about. You know, you just ain't throwing.
Very good.
Yeah, you ain't just throwing stuff out there. You throwing good stuff, man. So continue to do that.
Sir.
Continue to listen. And continue to listen to Doc Rogers, my good brother, Doc Rogers.
Oh,
man.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Yeah. So, all right, Baba. All right, Sister Nabantu and Brother Lus, I'm gonna do my little sign off. Just stick around. Just hold on. Stick around, okay? Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. Because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a great weekend. You enjoy yourself and you be safe. brothers and sisters. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bivahodie. Bivahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Until next week, you have a good weekend. Peace, family.